It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Farage. You're with us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, we're taking your calls on what you would change or not change in Governor Scott Walker's budget proposal.
First, we're digging into the Legislative Fiscal Bureau's analysis of Governor Scott Walker's budget proposal.
The nonpartisan bureau just released its review of the budget yesterday. They concluded the budget bill would raise taxes and fees on Wisconsin residents and businesses by $48 million over the next 2 years. That doesn't account for the $300 million in the bill set aside to hold down property taxes.
Steve Deller is with us to talk about this new review of the budget. He's a professor of agricultural and applied economics at UW-Madison. Steve, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
So on balance, the Legislative Fiscal Bureau says the governor's budget would, first of all, raise taxes and fees. Governor Walker's office has pushed back on that, saying he's also cutting property taxes or putting money aside to hold them down. So is the headline here, governor's budget raises taxes or not?
Well, it is a little bit. I think what's happening is that there's a couple of elements within the tax code that is being delayed a little bit. These are policies that were enacted in previous legislatures, and it were to provide some tax credits here and some tax credits there, and he's essentially saying, let's just delay the implementation of those. So in some regard, yeah, there's some taxes that are going up. It's actually tax cuts that were supposed to take place that are not taking place. There are a couple of tax credits like historic rehabilitation tax credit. That's being eliminated. So in some regards, taxes are going up, but not in a significant way.
So do you think the governor's office is right to emphasize that this isn't the main takeaway of this budget?
I think the governor's right. I think that there's some, there really, when you think about where's the big amount of money coming in from, it's increasing the audit rate and going after tax debt collection. So really, if you want to say that, we're raising taxes because we're enforcing the existing tax law a little bit more stringent, then, I would give the governor a break on this one.
Now, the analysis of this budget finds that the budget would include those tax increases on specific business sectors, mostly not on the general public. So who is going to be affected a little more specifically?
A lot of these are really aimed at businesses. The rehabilitation, historic rehabilitation, for example, that's generally businesses that are going in and remodeling existing businesses or existing facilities and things like that. The other one that's getting a lot of attention is the credit card companies and what they can and can't do with delinquent collection on sales taxes and things like that. So a lot of them really are aimed at businesses. The audit rate, though, and the tax debt collection, though, that's really going to be, who are they going to focus on? Are they going to focus their auditing on individuals, or are they going to focus it on businesses?
And is that a wait-and-see one?
That's a wait-and-see, yeah.
Well, the budget calls for raising a bunch of state fees, some state fees including state park vehicle sticker fees, daily camping fees at state parks. How does that factor in here?
One thing that Wisconsin has historically done is to rely on taxes to pay for services. What I mean really is the property tax, the income tax, and the sales tax. We generally, as a state, have not used fees and charges. A lot of other states have, in the name of keeping taxes down, they've gone after fees and charges. So Wisconsin historically has not done that. So actually raising some of the fee structure within the state is actually making us a little bit more in line with what other states have been doing.
Are there other examples of this budget where fees are being used?
Some of them are whether or not, I think the big one is whether or not the state park should be self-financing. I think that's a no-win proposition for the state parks. There's a reason why they are state and not privately run, is because these generally don't generate enough revenue on their own to keep going. That's why we as a citizenry have decided that, we want these things. So the question is, well, what's a fair fee structure? What's fair? It has been kind of cheap, to be honest with you. It's been very inexpensive to use some of these facilities. So raising the fees a little bit seems to make a lot of sense.
And the budget also calls for merging two state credits for expanding businesses. You talked about the historic property sum, but in terms of expanding those two state credits, how would that reduction affect taxes?
Well, it's not real clear. What they're doing is that there's two different programs right now that a business can declare a tax credit if they create certain types of business, or certain types of jobs. There's not a real, from an economic development perspective, there's no real clear evidence that these kind of credits really have, anything to do with job creation. A business is going to hire workers if the demand for that business is going up. And they have to increase sales, so they have to increase activity in order to meet that higher demand. It has absolutely nothing to do with credits. So on the one hand, yeah, we're raising taxes on businesses by taking away a credit, but from a policy perspective, I don't think that credit really did anything anyway.
And in terms of the Legislative Fiscal Bureau's analysis overall, what else strikes you about this?
Well, the one thing is the argument that if we look at the current governor's budget proposal and we look at current revenues and the current proposal and we take that out into the future, that there'd be a modest surplus. And that's drawing a lot of attention. And Speaker Voss has already said, if the current proposal does move forward and we do see a surplus in the future, they're already talking tax cuts.
Right, you're talking about the projected $500 million or so surplus.
Yes, that one. And already you can see kind of salivating around the idea of, tax cuts, tax cuts. Well, that's what got us into the current fiscal hole. So that makes me nervous. The problem with that analysis is that you've got the transportation fund. The current budget proposal does not really adequately address the hole in the transportation fund budget. And we can't just continue to fill that hole by running up credit card debt. And that $500 million is true if we allow the transportation fund to essentially kind of cave in on itself. So I think that that's a big, big problem with that forecasted surplus into the future.
Now, this analysis in that same vein points out that it looks like only about 2% of governor's budget here is accountable to bonding. What do you think about that percentage in the big picture?
I have not seen that 2%. I'd have to dig a little bit deeper. But it always makes me, on the one hand, interest rates are so low right now that it makes good fiscal sense to take advantage of these low, low interest rates. Now, having said that, it is bad public policy to essentially say we've got a gap in our budget and we're going to fill that gap by using a credit card. That's bothersome. Now, if they're saying what we're going to do is that we're going to accelerate investments in our transportation system, or we're going to make one-time investments in the park system, and we're going to use debt because interest rates are so low, that makes sense. That's perfectly acceptable. But to say that, well, we need to incur debt to kind of get us from point A to point B in terms of our day-to-day operations, that's not such a good idea.
We were talking about that, the possible projected surplus down the road of $500 million, and Democrats some critics saying tax cuts are what got Wisconsin into the crunch we're in now. What is, from your perspective, Stephen, the secret to stabilizing Wisconsin's finances?
I think we actually have to look at raising revenues. The idea of raising taxes is just so alien to folks, but I think that we really do need to kind of think about how can we make our tax structure so that it has the potential to grow into the future. And what I mean by this is, like, look at the sales tax, for example. We only pay sales tax on certain things. What we could do is that we could actually expand the base of the sales tax. We could cut the sales tax rate so that right now it's what's called revenue neutral. Okay, so we're changing the taxes, but we're not really generating additional taxes. But in the future, the potential for that source of revenue to grow is much better, much higher. I think that we need to be thinking that way. The Wisconsin Counties Association has had a proposal out for a number of years to do just that. And And they've been looking at it from the perspective of the flow of funds coming to the county governments. And I think their argument makes a whole lot of sense, and I think the state should be looking at that, you know, long term. So given the political environment that we're simply not going to raise taxes, I think we can look at how our taxes are structured, do it in a revenue-neutral way, but yet 4 or 5 years from now, we're on a more stable financial footing.
Well, Steve, thanks a lot for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That was Steve Deller, Professor of Agricultural and Applied Economics at UW-Madison. He was with us to talk about Governor Walker's budget proposal.
Coming up, we want to hear from you. We keyed in on some of the taxes, the fees in the budget. Now, big picture, what do you think about Governor Walker's proposed state budget? If you could, what would you change, or what do you want to see stay the same in that budget? What should Wisconsin prioritize in its state budget? You can call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post over on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're taking your calls on the state budget. What would you like to see change in the governor's proposed budget? What do you think Wisconsin's first budget priority should be? And do you like the direction Wisconsin is headed? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is a little early kickoff to public hearings on the budget. The state's Joint Finance Committee is going to start a series of 4 regional public hearings tomorrow in Brilliant. They'll be in Milwaukee on Friday, Monday at the University of Wisconsin-Barron County, and next Thursday in Reedsburg. So these are the people setting the budget, and they're going around getting public input on everything in the budget, and now you can join in. What do you make of what you've heard of the budget so far? What has you worried? What are you happy to see? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And if you're planning to go to one of these regional hearings, what would you like to say? What would you like the governor to hear? Some hot button issues this time around, including the freezing of conservation land purchases, some restructuring at the DNR, and issues with UW system budget cuts.
Now, what has you worried? Do you like the idea of big cuts to the university system? For example, should the DNR or should the state parks, I should say, be financially self-sustaining? Maybe pay a little higher fee on those. 800-642-1234 is the number to call, 800-642-1234. And again, you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. While you're calling, I'll let you know that tomorrow at 4, we're going to talk to Wisconsin Public Radio's state government reporter, Sean Johnson. He's going to be at that first of these hearings, the series of hearings tomorrow at Brilliant High School. He'll let us know what the public has had to say, how the Joint Finance Committee has responded so far.
And right now is your chance to let us know what you have to say about the governor's budget. We've been discussing it over the weeks here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Now tell us what you think, whether or not you make it to one of these hearings. Sound off now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234.
And we'll go to Cindy in Madison to start us off now. Cindy in Madison is with us. We'll take her call now at 800-642-1234 on line 1. Cindy, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. I don't know a great deal about the budget, but you asked what should be prioritized. And I think paying our bills in an ethical and timely manner would be a high priority to keep us out of trouble in the future. But also I think spending money wisely and protecting the environment should also be a high priority, and just not selling out our resources to the highest bidder.
All right, Cindy, thanks a lot for that call. As we take your comments on what you've seen so far in Governor Walker's budget proposal, what you might like to see change, or what you're happy to see in there at 800-642-1234.
And we go next to Dolores joining us in Kenosha. Dolores, hi.
Oh, hi. I love the last caller. I totally agree with her. I don't mind paying my taxes, as long as they spend it wisely. When you look at what we need to develop this state, we need people going through the university system. You know, and yes, I think if they want to do something with the university system, maybe they should look at tweaking things and asking for more accountability there. But that doesn't mean that they need to cut out money from them. And the DNR, my God, they protect the jewel that is the state of Wisconsin. And I getting rid of the scientists, getting rid of the science that helps direct how we are going to manage this property, that's stupid.
Okay, well, thank you for your thoughts, Dolores.
We'll go now to Roger in Winona, Minnesota. Roger, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you. I just have an observation, and it happens to be that your state of Wisconsin, which I was a resident of for a number of years, has a very strongly Republican governor and has significant budget woes. Yet your neighboring state here, Minnesota, a Democratic governor, is looking at a budget surplus. I don't understand all the finances around here, but I don't know if that has anything to kind of reflect on what's going on, and I'm just going to leave it at that.
Roger, thanks a lot for the call. There's been a lot of compare and contrast between the two states, the different budget approaches, and you can check the Joy Cardine Show archives. They spent an hour focusing on that very issue. Right now, we're taking your calls on Wisconsin State Budget. Joint Finance is taking this one on the road, a series of four hearings looking for public input. Get a start on it now at 800-642-1234 or with a post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we go next to John. John is joining us in Grafton. Hi, John.
Hi. You know, I lack the understanding of what's the point of the hearings. This legislature has shown itself over the last 4 years that it couldn't care less what the people have to say. It's only interested in what its sugar daddies have to say, the Koch brothers and the major businesses and the major donors. They'll have these hearings, whether it's a public hearing with the people or whether it's this bogus 24-hour hearing that they just had in the assembly a couple weeks ago. They have their agenda set. They're going to pass what they're going to pass. They don't care. They're just playing games with us. We have no input. We have no chance of getting our state back. It has been stolen.
John, we'll leave it there. Thanks for the call.
We've got Margie with us next in Rockland. Margie, hi. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I hardly ever call in, but I'm driving and I have a few thoughts. We have really got to get our priorities straight with education in Wisconsin. I'm a retired nurse, and I was so proud that our boards and our educational system was on top-notch all through the years, and my children graduated from the UW system. And I have no little ones in school now, but that doesn't mean that we do not need to protect our educational system. It's been horribly hard on the teachers in the last year or two, the cuts to all the schools across the board. We all need to reevaluate, protect our educational system and things that matter. And that's my comment.
Margie, thanks a lot for calling in. Still time for your call at 800-642-1234. Your thoughts on Governor Walker's budget proposal. What do you like? What has you worried? 800-642-1234.
And we go next to Jeannie in Eau Claire. Hi there.
Hi. I want to restore the DNR, restore the GAB, restore school funding, and disband WEDIC.
Okay, a list there from Jeannie in Eau Claire. Thanks for the call.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. We've got another Jeannie now in Wauwatosa. Jeannie, hi.
Hi. Thanks. I agree very much that they're going to do what they want to do. I at least appreciate they're giving a little bit of public comment and time. But also, if people aren't listening to WPR, are they really getting the real information? I'm worried that not many people are aware of the depth of what's going to be going on.
Jean, thanks a lot for that call. By the way, you can get more information on the state budget tomorrow morning after 7 with Joy Cardine. She'll have a political scientist talking about some of the major proposals in this state budget. Another opportunity for you to weigh in with your thoughts on some of those issues as well. That's tomorrow morning at 7 on the Joy Cardine Show.
And we have, I think this may be the same caller we had on before. We'll see. Maybe a different Jeannie in Eau Claire. Jeannie, hello?
Yes.
Different Hello. Jeannie. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd really like to request that I think throughout our nation that our governments are no longer of the people, for the people, and by the people. And something's going, I mean, we need to rise up as a people and claim our country and claim our state back, because Governor Walker has just wrecked it.
All right. Thank you for that call.
Thanks for all of your calls. You can keep the conversation going over at the Central Time Facebook page. Your thoughts on Governor Walker's budget, what you would like the members of the Joint Finance Committee to hear as they tour the state, getting public response. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Since the midterm elections in 2010, Democrats have lost every single important statewide election except for one. Republicans now dominate in both the state Senate and Assembly, with the widest margin in the Assembly in more than 50 years.
Democrats in the state might point the blame to Republican Governor Scott Walker, outside spending on campaigns, redistricting. But our next guest says the real problem for Democrats is the Democrats.
And we're taking your calls on this. How do you think the Democratic Party of Wisconsin needs to change? And what needs to happen for the Democrats to start winning elections in Wisconsin? What would you like to see the Democrats do differently? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
David Haynes is with us. He's the editorial page editor for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where he wrote the piece, A Tall Order, Rebuilding the Wisconsin Democratic Party. You can find a link to that on the Central Time Facebook page. David, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome, Rob. Glad to be with you.
Well, this losing streak started more or less in 2010. Coming into there, you had Democrats controlling both houses of the state legislature, the governor's office, of course. And then 2010 happened. What happened there? How bad was it?
It was a watershed election. It was a watershed election. It was about as bad as it can be for a party. As you pointed out, they controlled both houses of the state legislature. They had the governor's office, and they lost all three, and Ron Johnson beat Russ Feingold for the U.S. Senate seat. So it certainly was a wave election year, but beyond that, it was even worse because it was at the end of the decade, and so because of the decennial census, reapportionment had to occur, and that left in the hands of the Republicans the job of making the maps for the new congressional and legislative districts. And, you know, they did what I think any party would do, given that power. They gerrymandered the state. And if you look at Craig Gilbert's story of our staff this morning, he makes, I think, a very strong case that redistricting is a huge problem for the Democrats going forward. So my basic point in the column was, you know, you have to win elections to have power, and you especially have to win elections that matter as much as 2010 did, and they just didn't do it.
Well, one way of looking at all this would be, this is a Republican success story. Governor Walker did well. The party did well. You saw people like Reince Priebus, who used to run the state Republican Party, get promoted, in effect, to run the national Republican Party. But you're making the case in your piece that it is in part a Republican success, but it's also a failure on the Democrats' part. How so?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Republicans are very strong right now in Wisconsin. There's no question about that. And as I was preparing the piece, I talked to a number of people in the Democratic Party who have ties to the party. And, you know, several of them said, look, Walker is perhaps the best politician of our generation. Now, I don't know if that's how much rationalization that is and how much it's true, but I've observed him for many years, and he is very good. And so is Robin Voss and Reince Priebus and others. But I think the Democrats have a couple of issues. One is, I think they have a messaging problem. You know, if you ask me what's the Republican brand, either in Wisconsin or nationally, I can tell you what that is, right? It's small government, low taxes, it's freedom. If you ask me what the Democratic brand is, either in Wisconsin or nationally, I have a much harder time putting my finger on that. So I think part of it's messaging, but I also think part of it is personnel. The Republicans right now, and this stuff goes in waves, but the Republicans right now have a much deeper bench. They have people who are in the prime of their political career, age 35 to 50, people like Walker and Voss and the Fitzgeralds. The Democrats have some of those people, but they also have a lot of young people who are just getting started. I mentioned a few of them in the column. I think they have great potential, but they're very young. And by the way, they're in the majority for probably a long time, or the minority for probably a long time. And then they have some of the old war horses who have a lot of experience, but, you know, they just don't have as many people in that prime of their political life as the Republicans have. So I think that's part of the problem as well.
Now, if you're a Democratic supporter, obviously you're worried about this. You want to see this problem tackled. If you're a Republican, you're saying, great, you know, we want to keep winning. And a lot of people might say, I don't really care much one way or the other. The parties are more or less the same. One of the points of your piece is that the state benefits if there is a real competition for control in the legislature and the governor's office.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. A competitive Democratic Party is really important. And that should be the case no matter what your political persuasion, because it forces both parties back to the center. It forces both parties to compete for more of the votes, to compete for more of the ideas. As it stands right now, and again, Craig pointed this out in his story as well this morning, it really means that one party sort of has carte blanche in the legislature, whether or not the public is entirely sold on their ideas. You know, the Republicans in the 2014 election, they have 63 of the 99 assembly seats, but just over 52% of Wisconsin voters voted Republican for governor, yet the party ended up with about 63% of the assembly seats. And so that matters, because a whole bunch of those assembly seats, of the 99, there's something like only 15 that are really competitive. And so you've got a lot of Republicans and frankly Democrats alike who don't have to worry much about listening to the other side.
Let's go to our callers. We've got full phone lines right away on this one. Steve starts us off in Trigo. Steve, hi.
Hi. I read Mr. Dane's column last week, and he ended it with talking about the middle class. And I would have to disagree and say that Democrats need to focus on the working class. Going back to the New Deal era, championing the plight of working people. In particular, last year, Badger Care expansion and minimum wage raise referendums did really well all over the state, but Democrats didn't campaign on those things through the TV and the mailbox. So I think they need to get out and talk to working people face-to-face, expand the electorate beyond the known voter file, and that's the way to start winning assembly and state senate seats back before 2020.
Steve, thanks for the call. What do you think, David?
Well, I think he makes a good point, and I guess I would equate middle class and working class as one and the same, but I agree with you. I think that the Democrats need to have a message that appeals to working class people, but not only in the two population centers. This is a problem right now for the Democrats. They're geographically bound in Milwaukee and Madison. They need to have a message that's going to appeal out of Gamey County or up north. And that's been the case in the past. Again, these things come in cycles, but I think that's right. It is important.
Thanks a lot for that call. How important is party organization, the party mechanism? People have argued over the last decade or so that the Democratic Party is sort of a hypothetical concept. A lot of the legwork has been done by unions who are facing troubles of their own now. Is there rebuilding needed in the Democratic Party organization itself?
I don't think there's any question about that. And here I just want to say something about Mike Tate, the outgoing state chair. I think it's really facile and simplistic to blame Mike Tate for their problems. I heard people I talked to said to me that, you know, Mike Tate actually did the party a lot of good. He helped reorganize the party. He helped bring them into the digital age. He helped them with their fundraising. He deserves some of the responsibility here, but so do others. And, you know, Act 10 was a devastating blow politically to a big constituency of the party. So your point, Rob, about it being hypothetical in nature isn't too far off. So there is some reorganization that's needed. And I think that the Democrats have to reach out beyond those sort of historical constituencies. Not forget about them. I'm not saying that, but reach beyond them.
Back to our callers now. We've got Mike on the line with us in Racine. Mike, hi.
Hi. You know, I think if you give me a moment, there's one single thing that I think if you needed to look to a single act they lost the governorship for the Democratic Party and went to Scott Walker, and that was Jim Doyle vetoing the concealed carry law. And not because of the concealed carry law per se, but because it really went to the heart of where we've lost the rural working class and inner city coalition. We lost the rural side. If you notice things that Scott Walker did just a year or so before he seriously began campaigning for governor, he did things like all of a sudden he learned how to deer hunt. Never deer hunted before, but he managed to get a license and get out there and do the deer hunting thing and had lots of pictures taken for the one day he went out. He also learned how to ride a Harley Davidson as Milwaukee County executive so that he could be seen on his one trip a year, you know, being the working class in leathers, riding a Harley. And then when it came to things like concealed carry and other things involving the DNR, he was seen as being the one that was listening to that rural coalition or that rural component.
Mike, really, I want to jump in. Interesting point. David, gun control in particular, do you think that as single issues go, that is one that really swayed some people from the Democratic side to the Republican side?
Well, it certainly resonates, especially outside, again, of the population centers. But I think to the caller's larger point, Governor Walker is a very good politician. And, you know, he does have this image of sleeves rolled up. I'm working for you, the taxpayer. Sack lunch. Don't take my salary as county executive. The Democrats, at least politically, could learn something from that.
We're talking to David Haynes from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel editorial page about how Democrats can rebuild their party here in Wisconsin.
And we're taking your calls on this. How would you rebuild the Democratic Party of Wisconsin? What do you think Democrats need to do differently if they want to start winning elections again in Wisconsin? And who do you blame for the Democrats' losing streak in recent years? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation now with David Haynes of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel editorial page about the plight of the Democratic Party in Wisconsin.
And we're taking your calls, too. You can be a pundit wherever you are across the political spectrum. What are the Democrats doing wrong? What are the Republicans doing right? What do the Democrats need to change to have a chance of winning? Or are you happy the way things are with them losing at the state election level? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. David, we heard from Joe on Facebook who says Republicans did one thing right by establishing the Tea Party wing that motivates independent and swing voters to vote. The Democrats, Joe says, need a strong progressive wing as personified with the likes of Russ Feingold, Liz Warren, and Bernie Sanders. So that's a constant debate, I think, among Democrats for many years now. Move to the center or go to the progressive roots?
Yeah, and I guess it's a matter of taste, I suppose, but I'm one who argues that there are going to be more people in the state who are centrist in their politics, even if they lean left, than there are who would be as far left on the progressive wing. So I think going too far to the left, I don't think that's a winning formula in Wisconsin.
We'll go back to our callers. We've got Jim on the line with us in Rice Lake now. Jim, hi.
Yes, my comment is structural. I think, you know, the 2010 election in Wisconsin was a red wave election. It was in part response to Obama's agenda, and older white voters came in droves. And as a result of that, the Republicans completely gerrymandered the state, both in the Assembly and the Senate, when they had control of the executive as well as both branches. I think the Democrats need to bring a reformist cry up somehow to get these districts ungerrymandered, both on the Assembly, the Senate, and the congressional level, if they expect to regain power. And I think they need to bring out a reformist agenda and say, we have to have these things set by judges or objective people and not simply have politics as usual. And then they should also bring up the issue of this, you know, the Republican Party because of Citizens United is the best party money can buy.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. David, some people pointed out Democrats had a chance to do that. They had the governor's office. They had both houses of the legislature before 2010. One thing they did not do was redistricting reform.
No doubt about it. And our editorial board, as well as editorial boards around the state, pushed the Democrats at that time to do it. And so I couldn't agree more with the caller. I think that redistricting reform long term is essential, but it is an uphill climb in the state right now. We favor a method used in Iowa where the Legislative Services Bureau draws the maps and then the legislature actually approves them. So it's not taking it out of the hands of the elected officials, but it does give the first crack at it to a nonpartisan organization.
You know, since each party has had a chance to do this when they had total control and didn't, do you think there's a chance that it could happen if someday we had divided government in the state? Is that the thing it would take to get people to the table and do something like that?
I think it's going to take people like your caller who get fed up and demand it. I think it takes a grassroots groundswell. I think that's the only way it happens because neither party's going to do it. Look, the Democrats in Illinois were just as guilty as the Republicans in Wisconsin. They might not have been quite as good with their computer programs, but they gerrymandered Republicans out of their seats in Illinois. So I think either party would have done and what the Republicans did given that power. You have to keep your eye on anyone who's in power.
Talking to David Haynes from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about the Democrats' mostly losing streak since 2010 and what might be done, if anything, to make them competitive again. Greg is with us now on the phone in Stevens Point. Greg, hi.
Yeah, I was going to agree with him. I think most of the state is center right a little bit. I know that's what we were, but the running when they ran to Illinois. Or when every bill that this administration has passed is held up in court, what, right or wrong? I mean, you know, you got to give it a chance. It's just after a while that gets a little old. And I was going to say, it's ideas that win elections, not money. You can blame the Citizens United all you want and all of that. I don't think that many people pay attention to commercials when it comes to that. I really don't. I guess that's about it. Thank you.
Greg, thanks for the call. David, that comes back to something you said earlier, that Republicans, it's easy to say what they're standing for, their brand, you said, Democrats less so. Is it going to take Democrats having presenting their ideas better, making their brands to turn things around for them?
Well, I think they need stronger candidates, particularly at the top of the ticket. The way you begin to dig out from this is you start winning elections. And the easiest way to do it, this is not easy, but the easiest way is to win a statewide election. They'll have an opportunity to do that in 2 years and then 2 years after that. Flipping the assembly with the deficit they have now, I mean, that could take a generation. There aren't that many competitive seats. And so the place to start there is with the few competitive seats that are left, and you just try to win. Ideas do matter, and to the caller's point about money, I'd have to disagree a little bit. I think money does matter in elections, and the ads, even though we like to say we don't watch them, they do have an effect or they wouldn't be on.
Back to our callers now. Thanks, Greg. We've got Ann on the line in Hortonville. Ann, hi.
Hi. My suggestion for the Democrats is that they be a little bit more assertive. They take the negative issues that the Republicans put out, and they don't respond to them. They don't do anything. They don't get out there.
All right, Ann. Democrats, I guess you're saying, don't fight hard enough in the election season. Do you think that's true, David?
Yeah, I think it depends. In the last election with Governor Walker and Mary Burke, there were two points in that campaign where Mary Burke was heard very badly. One was the so-called plagiarism, where parts of her jobs program were cut and pasted from another jobs program by a political consultant. Call that what you will. That really hurt her with voters. And later on, in trying to explain her departure from Trek, I think that hurt her at the last moment. I think in both cases, less so with the first, more with the second,
It's sort of an example of someone who's not really a politician, who's learning how to be one. And I think it was both of them to some extent were unforced errors. So to me, it's not so much not fighting in that case. It was creating problems for yourself that maybe someone who had been in this game longer would not have created.
And briefly, David, as we wrap up, Democrats tend to do better in presidential year elections. Do you think they'll have a better opportunity in 2016 than in 2014, say?
I don't think there's any doubt about it. The reason they do better is that more Democrats turn out in presidential years than in off-year elections. It's one reason that even though Russ Feingold lost to Ron Johnson in 2010, that if he does choose to run in, it's looking like he will, that I think that race could be very competitive in 2016.
David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're welcome. Glad to.
That's David Haynes, editorial page editor for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can find a link to the piece that started this conversation, A Tall Order, Rebuilding the Wisconsin Democratic Party, over at the Central Time Facebook page.
Weekday mornings from 6 to 9, it's the Joy Cardine Show. Tomorrow morning at 6, students at Lincoln Middle School in Kenosha recently stood up for a classmate with Down syndrome who was being bullied during a basketball game. Joy Cardine speaks with a guest who says peer intervention with bullies can stop 85% of bullying. That's tomorrow morning at 6 on the Joy Cardine Show.
Now, yesterday here on Central Time, we heard about an effort to build bipartisanship in Wisconsin as former Congressman Tom Petri and Dave Obey, Republican and Democrat, kicked off a speaking tour together. They say they're worried about the partisan divide and lack of a spirit of compromise.
But according to one survey, there are at least two topics where there is bipartisan consensus. Those topics, beer and cheese.
The survey organization Public Policy Polling is best known for its political research, but in a poll conducted earlier this month, released today, they checked attitudes towards some Wisconsin cultural icons.
80% of those surveyed had a favorable view of cheese. I wonder what the other 20%, they had an unfavorable? I don't know. And that number held up for both Democrats and Republicans, and beer came in at 65% favorable, with Democrats and Republicans both within a couple percentage points.
So, maybe the key to political compromise, start with some beer and some cheese, then tackle the budget.
Out now with a little cheese music from the band Ween.
Where did cheese go?